Welcome to a podcast of the Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Certainly, we're going to go back to our agency tomorrow, and we're going to tell our
2 years later.
Our director, we hear those comments. What I'm saying to you, though, is that we also would like complaints when there are specific instances.
We haven't had dust like this since the state line plant closed two, three years ago. I had a white windowsill that I painted white, so every morning when that plant was operating, I cleaned it off so we could see how much black dust we were getting. I haven't had it in 2 years. This summer it was so bad I can't tell you, so it's not just right by the piles. The wind, especially the southwest wind, picks it up and it goes everywhere in the entire neighborhood.
You want to ask each and every one of these individuals who opposes that permit, I'm sure all of them are going to raise their hand.
Right.
That black powder, I've been cleaning. When I found out it was contaminated, my kids, my grandchildren have asthma. I'm not moving. I was thinking of leaving. A lot of our people have left. A lot of the people who don't want to fight. It's time to vote these guys out. Get Chicago, get the community back. I am not running. I am not running. I am going to fight these guys.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Andy's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a pierogi's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere. It's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees. And by Recycled Granite, featuring eco-friendly split stone veneers and handmade products by individuals with disabilities. Go to recycledgranite.com. He's a legendary, charismatic megafauna in his own mind. Here he is, Mike Novak.
You know, I'm running a little bit behind here, and you know how I can tell? Anybody following us on Facebook can tell, because I just posted the, usually on Facebook I put this week's show, and I'll let folks know what's going on, and I did it at 9:01:30, something like that, while we were still in the news, in AP Radio News. It's going to be like that for the next few weeks, and we'll be talking about that later in the show, mainly because I'm going to be busy on Saturdays. I was doing some caroling at the Goodman Theater yesterday in the evening, and then didn't get around to posting a few things on this until late last night, and some this morning. And I'll be doing that at the Morton Arboretum for the next X number of Saturdays, and we'll talk about their illumination event, program, whatever you want to call it, light show, light display. We'll talk about that later in the program. I did want to thank the Chicago Sun-Times for that bit of audio at the top of the show. That was from a meeting on the south side of Chicago on Thursday about Petcoke, the Petcoke piles that are there, and what is going to be done with it. It was the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency, right, Lisa? Because you were there.
I was there. It was an incredibly hot meeting.
And you don't mean that it was warm inside the building.
No, there were some very angry, very vocal, very afraid people.
Okay, we're going to get to that in a second, and Thomas Frank will join us as well about that. Rick DeMille weather, as always, 9:45. It snowed in my yard this week. Then it froze, and all the leaves dropped off the ginkgo trees and a lot of other trees. They just kind of went poof, onto the ground. And if you go to my website, MikeNovak.net, I've got on the homepage a picture of a ginkgo on Fullerton Avenue where every single leaf dropped off the tree and is sitting there on the sidewalk below it. That's how sudden this cold was. And Rick DeMille will talk about that. And the fact that it's, 65 degrees right now? Something ridiculous? It's really warm out there. Hey, it's fall in Chicago, I guess. In the second hour, I have a ton of folks coming in from the Edgewater Environmental Sustainability Project. They're doing great things in my former neighborhood. I used to live in Edgewater. Can't afford to live there anymore. But it's a great neighborhood. And they're going to talk about what they've been doing, including food scrap recycling, composting, and other environmental activities.
Really exciting because it's grassroots. They wanted it. They did it.
Yeah. And you can find that information on MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show and see what the Edgewater Environmental Sustainability Project is about. And Tom Murphy, Killian Walsh, and Como, and Han Pham will all be here in the studio. I guess they're all going to pile. Do you?
Mm-hmm. Yep. She's big in solar, too.
Is she really?
Yeah. We'll have to talk about climate
change. Well, I know her because she spoke to, because of this composting effort they're doing in Andersonville. She came to speak to the Chicago Recycling Coalition. So that's where I met her, and now I get to meet her again. So they will all be on the program. And then finally, at the end of things, and as you can see, we got a ton of stuff on the show. Jody Osmond, who's with Cedar Valley Sustainable Farm, will be here. They are a meat CSA. So if you view yourself as an omnivore, or a carnivore, I would hope as a human being, you're probably an omnivore. Have your vegetables too. But they do meat products in a sustainable way, in a humane way. And his wife, Beth, has been on the show before. And I ran into Jody at the Logan Square Farmers Market several weeks ago before they closed up for the season. And he sort of waved me over and he said, "I want to be on the show." I said, okay. Sure. Usually if people pitch me and they're nice and he's a nice guy, I say, yeah, okay. So he's coming in, and he and Wes King, who's the executive director of the Illinois Stewardship Alliance, will talk about how this group called A Band of Farmers is helping market CSAs in a wider forum. For instance, one of the things they're going to do, there's going to be the Chicago Federal Executive Board is hosting the 2013 Federal Employees Health and Benefits Fair, and that's coming up on November 21st. And there, for the very first time, I guess this is a historic thing, there will be a CSA fair in conjunction with the Federal Employee Fair. So the idea is to introduce federal employees to the concept of CSA and get them on board. And I think that's really cool. So they will talk about that. And Wes King will also be here because he's going to give us an update on the farm bill. Wait a second. I don't know why I should ding because it's just, I should play something else. When we talk about farm bill, we talk about Congress. And that's just
play like a dirge of some kind.
Yeah, that was
bum bum bum.
Well, let's think about the people in Congress. When I think about the people in Congress, I have to play this.
You knew the job was dangerous when you took it, Fred.
Okay. I've been meaning to roll that one out for some time now, and I finally got a chance. Of course, that's from Super Chicken. Everybody knows that, right?
Sure. Uh huh.
Come on.
No,
I did not.
I did not know that, but I knew.
What? wait. Okay.
Three, but you were saving it. You were saving it for something good. I could tell.
Now, maybe if Rob was here, he would have
No. I'll bet Rob will tweet. He'll say, I knew that was from Super Chicken.
You knew the job was dangerous when you took it, Fred.
That is Super Chicken. And you don't know the theme?
I'm Googling it because I have to apparently educate myself.
When you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking, buck, 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 there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Nope.
You don't know
nothing.
That theme? Fred, if you're afraid, you'll have to overlook it. Besides, you knew the job was dangerous when you took it.
I don't know it, but it sounds great.
I wish I knew it. Yeah,
you're good at it.
He will drink his super sauce and throw the bad guys for a loss, and he will bring them in alive and kicking. Buck, 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 buck. There is one thing you should learn when there is no one else to turn to. Call for Super Chicken. Buck, 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 buck. Call for Super Chicken. Buck, buck.
I feel deprived that I don't know this.
Super Chicken is wonderful. We're going to get all these people writing and calling in now and saying, oh, yeah, Super Chicken. I remember that.
I think it's thrilled that you knew every word. Thank you. My morning's complete.
And next week I will sing the theme to My Mother, the Car.
Also something I do not know.
You don't know that one either, huh? Okay. That was a TV show. All right. My Mother, the Car.
Okay.
All right. It's the Mike Novak Show with my talent, weekly talent show here. We're going to have to get serious for a second, and I am going to bring in our guest, Thomas Frank. Thomas, good morning. How are you?
Hi, good morning.
And Thomas is involved in the South Side. He's a resident of East Chicago, Indiana, member of Tar Sands Free Midwest. He's an activist, an artist, and you, along with Lisa Albrecht, were at this raucous, and I guess the raucous is the correct word to use, meeting on the South Side. On Thursday. How would you characterize it, Thomas?
I think raucous is a good name, word for it. I also think you can use fuming. I think the crowd was fuming with anger. I think they felt they were left outside of the process. Now they found themselves in this very dangerous situation with the petcoke just blowing all over the place.
Right. Let's explain this to people. First of all, we talked about this issue on the show, and you might have read about it in the paper. You might have seen it on various media outlets. I'm glad that this is a story that's being covered.
Starting to get covered. I think it's still tiny, but to me, it should have been front page news.
Yeah, it should be. You're right. On every newspaper.
But it's getting there.
But the idea is that the BP refinery, which is near your home, right, Thomas?
Yeah, exactly.
Is doing a $3.8 billion upgrade. And upgrade is probably the wrong word. But they're going to they refine the tar sands oil that comes from Alberta. And the byproduct of that is something called petcoke. And if you put it in a big pile, it basically looks like a pile of coal. And the southeast side of Chicago is a place where coal was piled for many years. And then we managed to get the three area coal-fired power plants shut down, Fisk, Crawford, and State Line. And those coal piles began to disappear. But amazingly, other piles started to appear that look suspiciously like coal but are not and might actually be worse than having piles of coal, and that's piles of petcoke, which is the byproduct of tar sands refining. And they started appearing along the banks of the Calumet River. Have I got it right so far, Thomas?
Right. You did a great job, and I heard your program a couple of weeks ago. You did a fantastic job introducing people to the tar sands issues and what's happening down the southeast side. It's interesting that, we've gotten rid of coal, but we've replaced it with petcoke, which even has a higher density of carbon and a larger carbon footprint. And so now that is floating around. One of the things to recognize in this whole situation is that it's all a part of a network. I think the citizens of Southeast Side were right in trying to ask, where is this coming from? And looking at BP, where it's being produced. And those here in Northwest Indiana are looking at, well, where is it coming from before it comes to BP? And that is through the Ember network of, it's a continental network of pipelines coming from Alberta all the way down through here. And
Yeah, you know, and that's fascinating, too, because that's an issue in itself. Petcoke is one of the issues. The idea of transporting tar sands through aging pipelines that may or may not be able to withstand that pressure is another issue.
Right. And one of the things we know about the network is that it's distributing the what's called dilbit, because they have to slurry bitumen into the pipe so it can actually flow a little bit. And they're distributing it to 12 refineries in the Midwest. So what we're seeing with the increase, they're looking to triple the capacity of the pipelines in the next couple of years, is that we're seeing that we're going to see a lot more petcoke piles in the Midwest. And so it's an issue that is impacting lots of communities.
So all these folks got together on the south side because word got out that one of the facilities that is storing the petcoke now, which is KCBX, is looking to upgrade its facility. I use that word again. Make it larger. Bring in more. It's KCBX Terminals is the name of the company. There are a couple of places that are storing petcoke down there. Beamsterboer Slag Corp is another. The IEPA, the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency, called this meeting to let people know that they want to approve this contract, what, in a couple of weeks? Wasn't that the timetable for this, Thomas?
Well, that's what's really was ironic about the whole meeting, is that the public, the residents there, didn't even know the meeting was called about an approval of a new permit or
A
modification of a permit. They thought they were coming there to talk about what was presently there, and that they hadn't been informed about it.
Really? You mean they found this out? No, but this was, they found out when they were there, Lisa?
Yes.
So that
the room erupted. And then the big question that was completely unanswered, both by the Attorney General's office, who was present. There were two representatives from the Attorney General's
Lisa Madigan's
who is currently in the process of investigating.
They filed suit against KCBX.
And there's two charges, and they're investigating those two charges. And one of the questions on the floor was, how can the Illinois EPA possibly consider extending or expanding an existing permit when the current permit is up for investigation and charges? And there was no answer to that question. I mean, none. Silence. They stood at the front of the room, mouth closed, no words coming out. There was no answer by anybody.
There were several questions that the public threw to the IEPA that they just were silent on.
One question was, what specifically is this material? Yeah. No answer.
Really?
They could not say what the materials
were. What petcoke is?
No, because there are different grades of petcoke.
Okay.
And so what was this specific petcoke? What is this? And no one could answer that question.
Yeah, okay. And here's the thing that I was playing. You heard at the top of the show a video that the Sun-Times put together. And if you go to the article on this, which I've linked to my website, you can click on this. And I played this at the top of the show, and Lisa's head nearly came off. I'm going to play this real quick for you again. Hear the beginning of this.
Certainly, we're going to go back to our agency tomorrow, and we're going to tell our... We're going to tell our director. We hear those comments. What I'm saying to you, though, is that we also would like complaints when there are specific instances.
We have.
Okay. And that's when Lisa kind of went nuts. Yeah, the idea that nobody has complained about this. Well, that was the implication, wasn't it?
That was the very first thing they said, is that they hadn't received a single complaint. That's how they opened up the discussion, and I think people just erupted. Also, when they articulated the issue of the permit, they told them they had a week to approve or disapprove or make a decision on this, and people didn't even know that it existed, let alone that something had to be done right away.
And I think one of the things that really is infuriating this community is this is probably 4 or 5 decades now of environmental injustice, of the community not being represented, not getting a voice. They finally got rid of the coal plants. They finally got rid of the piles of coal and the dust that resulted. The steel plants are gone. This is a community that is trying to heal. 60617, according to one of the people in the room, has the highest death rate in the city.
Okay, a question I want to ask, and I imagine it might have gotten asked there. We've heard from the IEPA, and believe me, I'm not a fan of the IEPA. The Attorney General's office was represented there. What about the mayor? Did his name come up at all during this meeting?
He came up several times in. I think he's going to weigh in on it, but he has yet to weigh in on this at all at this point.
Is he waiting to see which way the wind blows? And I can tell you the wind's actually picking up that petcoke and blowing it into the city. If he's waiting to see where the wind blows, that's where the wind is blowing right now.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because that annoys me somewhat, too, is that the mayor hasn't weighed in at all on this yet. One would think he would want to protect the citizens of his metropolis. But that's I just had to ask that because I haven't heard Mayor Rahm Emanuel's name mentioned at all during this so far.
Well, and that was a big point of conversation in the room is where is he? Where is he on this subject? You know, he weighed in when it was politically convenient on the coal plants. Where is he now? Mm-hmm. Alderman John Pope was there and gave many unsatisfactory answers to the constituents. The constituents were screaming and yelling about how much money he's received from KCBX, which is the Koch brothers property.
Right.
You know, there was a lot of very disgruntled people wanting to know why the aldermen and specifically the mayor have done nothing on this issue.
So where does that leave us? If the EPA says, IEPA says that they have to have notices, they need to have complaints filed, where do people go to file complaints?
Well, they supplied a website and a phone number to go to call, but it's such a short notice. And I think what people kind of felt at the moment was that the permitting process was just simply broken down. The legal process is simply broken down, and they need to find other more creative ways to draw attention to this. They want that stop. They want those piles out of there. And I got to tell you, I think the Southeast side has been fabulous in responding to this and articulating where failures in the process have occurred. You know, I don't think it's a mistake that a mistake made that the permitting industries pollute as much as they do, that they threaten to make not only the communities around them, like Southeast neighborhood, almost an uninhabitable, but also threaten to make the planet uninhabitable. So this industry is kind of at the sunset of its existence. We need to look past fossil fuels because of the impacts. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the industry is doubling down on the dirtiest, most difficult forms of carbon. And so I think Environmental Task Force and the Southeast side have responded in an amazing fashion to really clarify this issue. They're speaking and they're not being heard. They didn't know about this, where it came from, why it was in their neighborhood. After all the work that they've done, why was this happening? So I think it was a really good meeting.
What it does is calls attention to this, and you make some excellent points there, Thomas, which is this is the sunset of this. As they're ramping up and spending $3.8 billion for this refinery, you rightly so characterize this as the sunset of this industry because we can't afford to be doing this. And what about the – you live in Indiana. Those towns have to be affected in much the same way, aren't they?
Yeah, the process here occurred a little bit early, about 5 years ago when BP was up for permitting. And at that point, all the environmental groups in the region were kind of laid silent because we were looking for jobs at the time. And so they didn't look at the environmentals. And so when the permitting process went through, nobody knew what was going on. There wasn't a single permitting public meeting in East Chicago where the plant was being built. So people didn't even know about it. And I think that's the same scenario that Southeast Side is facing. The difference is that we, on the Southeast Side of Chicago and on the Indiana side, is that the Southeast Side of Chicago is in a post-industrial scenario. They're looking for new uses for that land. On the Indiana side, we're in a reindustrialization scenario. And what that has meant for us is that industry is continuing to encroach on neighborhoods and stuff. And right now we have a situation where BP is looking to buy out Marktown, a historically significant community, perhaps the most significant in the state of Indiana. And a lot of those residents have lived there for generations, and they have seen industry encroach further and further, and to the point that they're almost pinned in. There's no reason that BP needs to take over Marktown, except for their environmental liabilities. They can expand into other brownfields. There's plenty of brownfields adjacent to them, and so that's what we're seeing here is the uninhabited nature of what we've created under permitting. You know, what's happened here in BP is that the issues aren't exemptions or violations of permits, although that has occurred, or omissions. The problem is that under permitting, they've created an uninhabitable zone around them, and Marktown is going to be the next one on the chopping block. Now, we've had 150 years of industries encroaching and impinging on communities like this. I thought we were way beyond that, but it looks like we aren't.
Unfortunately, no, it doesn't. And folks can get involved, and I'm sure you would like them to do this, Thomas Frank, by the way, with the Tar Sands Free Midwest, and they can go on Facebook to Tar Sands Free Midwest. There's also a website, tarsandsfreemidwest.org. Any place else you would advise people to get involved, Thomas?
Right. Well, I'd like them to go to Tar Sands Free Midwest. There's a lot of other groups that are part of that coalition that I want to articulate and give a little plug. What we're trying to do is we're trying to connect up frontline communities, grassroots groups like the MICATs that are dealing with the Kalamazoo spill, or the DCAF in Detroit, where they had the same situation with Petcoke. Or I'm going to be meeting with a group today called CARE, Citizens Against Ruining the Environment, in Lockport, Illinois. There's also other groups like Bold Nebraska. And so what we're trying to do with Tar Sands Free Midwest is connect these stories up. A lot of groups have been working in isolation, and right now they're looking out for how do we get our stories out, because right now we're all a part of the same network, Tar Sands Network. I would say go on to Tar Sands Free Midwest. We have, if you want to get on our newsletter, you can sign up there, and we'll be informed and include you in the process.
And, of course, my friends at the Southeast Environmental Task Force are always up on this. We always keep tabs with them, and Tom Shepard is always involved, and so we will continue to keep you informed on this radio program.
Well, and I just posted, there's two action items that people can take right now. For people who live within the city of Chicago, please call 311. Let's get the mayor involved in this, and 311 calls will certainly do that.
Yeah, that's, if the EPA is saying
we need to be noisy,
that they're not hearing anything, they need to hear something right away.
And the other number is the Illinois EPA, which is 888-372-1996. And I posted that on the Facebook page. Again, that's 888-372-1996. And register a formal complaint with the Illinois EPA. They claim they haven't heard from anybody. Let's make sure they do.
All right. Thomas, thank you so much. I know you're busy this morning, and I appreciate your help. We will talk again in the future.
great. Thanks for the opportunity to talk.
Yeah, you know, and I do understand that we didn't even get much into the pipelines, but that's a whole nother issue, really. And we will probably get to that because, oh yeah, all it takes is a little bit of reading and a little bit of following to realize that they already crisscross all over the place. So you mentioned one that goes under the Straits of Mackinac, and the idea of that pipe bursting at the confluence of Lake Michigan and Lake Huron is just terrifying.
Exactly. And they're also looking to use rail now as the pipe, as people are becoming aware of the pipelines, they're now putting things on rail. And you have the Canadian National Rail Line that recently came in around Chicago that they're utilizing.
Yeah. All right. Well, again, we will talk further. Have a great day, and I'll talk to you soon.
Great. Thanks.
Bye, Thomas.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. And I'm so grateful, Lisa, that you went to that meeting.
It was great. You know, and one thing that I don't think that we mentioned is that they are anticipating expanding this tenfold. Tenfold. So it's already a problem. And now they want to make it 10 times bigger than this. And BP they're going to be dumping on the Calumet River. That is what that permit expansion is.
And the other thing we didn't talk about is that laws in Indiana are stronger than the laws in Illinois regarding this, which is why that Petcoke is coming over here. Who would ever think that Indiana's environmental laws were stronger than Illinois?
Well, and I think that should be something that we should all take seriously, because if Indiana outlawed this, it must be bad. Right?
Yeah. Write that down.
I'm sure
Rob Carthel is going to post that. Just if Indiana outlawed it, it must be bad. Okay. I talked to you last week about this, but it bears repeating. In this season of joy and sharing, D. Landreth Seed Company has a message. Please, if you can, give a bulb a home. We're getting to the end of the bulb planting season, and there are worthy heirloom and historic bulbs that deserve a place in your yard. So Landreth Seeds is having a Give a Bulb a Home sale, and it's going on right now. Landreth has discounted all of their remaining fall flower bulbs and heirloom garlic by 50%. That's less than wholesale pricing. And here's something else you should know. November 30th, I didn't know this until I found out through Landreth. November 30th is Small Business Saturday, a day to celebrate and support small businesses and all they do for their communities. Now, while Landreth may not be local for you, they're local somewhere, Pennsylvania, but they're certainly small. So celebrate them a week from Saturday by logging on and getting some great deals. Go to LandrethSeeds.com or their Facebook page, Landreth Seed Co., LANDRETH, or call 800-654-2407, 800-654-2407, and give an heirloom bulb a home this fall. Please note that their cold-treated bulbs, amaryllis, and paper whites are not included in the sale. D. Landreth Seed Company, purveyor of fine seeds since 1784.
Hi, this is Ron Calvio from Mighty House. Are you looking for a new ride? Looking for a cool ride? Looking for a ride that you can plug in so you can flip off the guy at the gas station? Well, here's your chance to get one for as little as $40. The Illinois Solar Energy Association is raffling off a 2014 Chevy Volt, and only 3,000 tickets will be sold. So how do you win? Go to illinoisolar.org and click on the link to the Chevy Volt raffle. You can buy one ticket for $40, two tickets for $60, or four tickets for $100. All raffle proceeds will fully benefit the Illinois Solar Energy Association, a nonprofit working to advance solar energy development throughout the state of Illinois. The winner will be drawn at the ISEA member meeting on December 7th, 2013. Again, that's illinoisolar.org to buy your tickets and to get all the small print details.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better?
Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545, or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. And wow, my phone is just going, is dinging and going nuts. I think it's because of all the tweets coming in. And I forgot to mention that in the studio today, I've got Lisa Albrecht. You heard her. Say hi, Lisa.
Good morning. And my rant continues.
Yeah, you can rant as much as you want until I turn off your microphone. And Sarah Vatka.
Good morning.
And look who's back.
Good morning.
Hi, Carol.
Hi.
We're all met with the exception of Rob Carthall. Now, there's starting this week, there's something really cool going on over at the Morton Arboretum that I'm going to be part of, and I'm very happy about it. It's called Illumination Tree Lights at the Morton Arboretum. And it's going to be, I haven't seen it yet. I'm going there Tuesday. It doesn't start till Friday, but I'm scoping it out Tuesday, because, my group, my caroling group, the Frozen Robins. Oh, wait, I guess I gotta do that. Is performing there for a number of Saturdays. Actually, we're performing this Friday and Saturday at Illumination at the Morton Arboretum. It's going to be this walk that you take. It's a 1 mile, as they describe it, gently rolling paved path. And, you know, the Morton Arboretum is wonderful, even without lights, because of the trees and the other plants that are growing there. But they're going to have this path and have lights on it that do different things. According to their website, you can hug a tree to make it grow brighter. I kind of like that idea. Sing to a tree and watch it change color. Well, we'll be doing some singing. I hope that we can make it change color. You can interact with light and color with the swipe of your hand. And on and on and on. And it just sounds like it's going to be delightful. Now, it runs from this Friday, that's November 22nd, to January 4th. It's basically closed on Mondays, but the rest of the time, and then, of course, Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, it will not be open. It starts at 4:30 each night with the last entry at 8:30 p.m. You can get all that information about tickets. You can purchase them online, and I have the link at MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show, or you can go to MortonArb.org. And now the Frozen Robins will be there from 5 to 8 this Friday. That's the 22nd of November. And then on the 23rd of November on Saturday. And then these Saturdays, we will be there 5 to 8 p.m. November 30th, December 7th, December 14th, December 21st, December 28th, and January 4th. So we'll be joining you on the trail and seeing the lights and what they've done with them. And like I said, I haven't been there yet. I'm going to see it this week and scope it out before we do our thing starting next Friday. So I'm very excited about it. I think it's going to be a terrific event, and I think you should take advantage of it. Bring the kids. If you don't have kids, come yourself and take a look at it. And it's not very expensive. The general admission basically for an adult is $15 and children are $10. And then the walk is, as I said, about a mile long. And they say you should prepare about an hour and a half worth of time and bundle up in case it's cold. Because it is outdoors. But what a way to celebrate the holidays. So there you go. I hope you take advantage of that. I hope you stop by. If I'm there warbling away, I hope you stop and say hello. And I hope a lot of you will get over to the Morton Arboretum to visit Illumination starting this Friday at 4:30. And coming up next, the inimitable Rick DeMaio.
ComEd Smart Ideas presents The Power of Small Changes.
Help! I'm a light bulb left on in an empty room. My energy is being wasted.
Fear not. I can help. There you go.
I'm saved.
Be a hero.
Hooray!
Save energy. Visit ComEd.com/home savings to find discounts and money-saving tips, like switching to compact fluorescents.
Visit ComEd.com/home savings.
ComEd, powering lives. This program is funded by ComEd customers in compliance with Illinois law.
The Mike Novak Show is sponsored in part by ComEd Smart Ideas. Discover instant discounts and money-saving tips at ComEd.com/home savings.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish Chicago's only local magazine dedicated to healthy and sustainable living. Natural Awakenings is available monthly, and we provide the latest news and trends about healthful living, including alternative and complementary medicine, fitness, good food and drink, healthy kids and families, and even healthy pets. Natural Awakenings also talks about local sustainability, gardening and environment, energy conservation, and green living. We feature local news and a calendar to help you stay connected. I can guarantee that each month you'll discover a new health tip, a tasty recipe, a service in your neighborhood, something that makes your life better. Natural Awakenings is free and available throughout the city and suburbs or online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. We've had cold, we've had snow, and now we're waiting for that big winter storm. Well, some people are waiting for it and some people are dreading it, which means that you want to keep the Care of Trees phone number handy. They can come through for you with 24-hour emergency service. When bad weather hits, sometimes your trees are the most vulnerable possessions on your property, and the risk to your safety increases when they fall on buildings, cars, and especially other trees. The Care of Trees has 24-hour emergency service. They will show up quickly, get the job done safely, and minimize further risk to your property and your loved ones. To talk to a certified arborist at the Care of Trees, call 800-508-9466. 800-508-9466. Write it down and call that number for a free consultation. If you call today, leave a message and your call will be returned tomorrow. Or you can go to thecareoftrees.com. The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees. Good morning and welcome to the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Let's go to Rick DeMaio, Ricky D on the phone line, our, well, the best meteorologist in Chicago.
Well, I don't know about that.
Bar none. I'm allowed to make those kinds of statements. I can just, I know our listeners think you're the best meteorologist in Chicago.
That means more than the rest of Chicago. How about that?
Well, everybody in the studio is in agreement.
Yeah, they're all fans here.
So there you go.
Every week at this time, they get out their little pennants and banners and they wave them around. And
I like all that.
Ricky D.
You know, believe it or not, Mike, I'm more concerned about the weather in the short term. You know, I sent you a message a few minutes ago about a tornado watch being issued for all of northern Illinois.
Really? Oh, I missed that. Did you send it via email?
I sent it via email, okay, and need to alert people up in northwestern sections of McHenry County where there's a tornado watch, or actually a tornado warning, now in effect until 10:15. So if people are listening to your show and have access to the internet or their smartphone, you can pull up the website, crh.noaa.gov, and then /LOT at crh.noaa.gov, and then /LOT. LOT is for Joliet. That's where the National Weather Service Doppler radar is located down there at Lewis University. And you click on that, and you can see the warning actually show up. This is a very, very fast-moving thunderstorm, Mike, and it's kind of odd to have, you know, temperatures in the mid-60s in early November. The only way to get that is to have a very intense and fast-moving area of low pressure, and that's basically what we have. So the warning right now is generally for a storm moving to the northeast about 50 miles per hour. It's right now on the ground. Well, they didn't say on the ground yet, but it is radar indicated. That means it's not on the ground, so I double-checked that. But it's in the small town of Capron, C-A-P, R-O-N, and it should be near Hebron about 10 a.m. and about Richmond about 10:05. The problem with warnings, when they're early in the morning on Sunday, no one's really thinking about getting up and looking outside and listening to weather reports at this hour of the day, particularly in November for tornadoes. So the likelihood of people being surprised by something like this is much, much higher than it would have been, say, like in April or May in the afternoon.
So yeah, that, yeah.
That's something we really want to get across to the people very, very quickly.
All right, give me that that website again. Is there a www on it or not?
Yeah, yeah, of course. There's a www.
All right.
And then the CRH.
CRH.
Yeah, C as in Central Regional Office.
Okay.
And then NOAA, that's the easy part.
Mm-hmm.
And then .gov, G-O-V.
Okay.
And then / LOT.
Okay.
And you'll find that information, and hopefully people can look at it. But
okay, I couldn't find it there. Did you get it, Sarah? What am I doing?
Yes. Yeah, we got it. It's on Twitter and Facebook.
Oh, great.
They've got it. I don't.
Well, that's okay. And then when you look at that also, if you look at, Mike, the Storm Prediction Center, that's spc.noaa.gov, and again, www in front of that, we're under a high risk. And a high risk is not very common around here during this time of the year or any time of the year. And really what the high risk says is it doesn't mean that you're going to get an F5 tornado on the ground, you know, for 45 minutes. It just means that we are under a very, very high likelihood of some amount or some type or in some frequency or intent, I guess is a better way of saying it, of severe weather. That could be gusty winds or even a small tornado that could move very, very fast. So, you know, we often talk about how the month of November is typically the second severe weather season in Chicago. And this one, as you can see, is not hiding at all. I mean, I think what's interesting is we had, and I heard you at the top of the show talking about how we had, snow on Monday. We had about a half inch, and then we had that Arctic blast coming Monday night.
Yeah.
And Tuesday was just brutally cold. And then we followed up with temperatures in the upper 50s and then mid-60s on the weekend. And when you think about it, it's not like we had the warm weather first and the cold weather second. That's the normal way that you go into a colder weather pattern. We actually went cold and warm. So think about how the atmosphere is adjusting or readjusting against the norm. So the way that this week is working is almost more like it would be in March, where you start out cold, you end up warm, but it's actually going the other way around. So, again, one of these weird things with climate variability that we've seen more and more of how that is kind of moving through the area. But all that is set aside, I think the most important thing to talk about is obviously the severe weather threat.
Yeah, yeah. I'm looking at that spc.noaa.gov site, and it's like a bullseye right here.
Yeah.
on Illinois and Indiana.
Yeah, and I think the most interesting thing about today is that in about 2 hours they're going to be kicking off and playing football at Soldier Field, and most likely that game will probably be impacted from a standpoint of being delayed. They don't cancel football games, but I wouldn't be surprised if that game is delayed. Probably by about a half hour to 45 minutes to even an hour, due to the fact that you could obviously have the threat of gusty winds. They don't want people in the stadium and obviously lightning And what makes it even more interesting, Mike, is I'm heading to the game, believe it or not.
Are you really?
Yeah, a friend of mine who's a meteorologist said, hey, I got a ticket for the game on Sunday. And I'm thinking to myself, I wonder if I was like the fifth person on the list that everybody, all his other meteorology friends said, why do I want to go to a game that's going to rain out? But I'm only kidding on that.
Okay, that's actually really funny that your group would probably have a higher awareness of what the weather is, whether you're going to go to a sporting event. I would say, oh, Bears tickets? Sure, I'm in. And the last thing I would do would be check the weather.
These are the things we do. And at least it's kind of interesting because here we are. We're going to be like looking more up at the sky rather than what's going on in the field if the game is being played at that point. And I got a feeling with the way that this line is setting up, in the short term, it looks like the back edge of this line may actually clear the Chicago area sometime around 1 p.m. And let's not forget about our neighbors over in Indiana. It may not clear the area from about, say, Gary down to about, say, St. John, Valparaiso, in that area, not until about maybe 2. And what was also interesting, Mike, on Tuesday, 12 to 14 inches of lake effect snow fell across the lake in Berrien County. Nearly a foot in St. Joe, and then nearly 6 inches downwind of Lake Michigan and parts of northwest Indiana. And that really is a testament to not only the cold air, but the fact that the lakes have really held on to their warmth. Still 50 degrees late this late in the year. It usually signifies a much better chance of getting lake effect snow. So here we have, Arctic conditions, lake effect snow, and then severe weather all in a matter of 6 days. It's pretty unusual.
Yeah, I'm not surprised at the snow that happened on the other side of the lake because it was so cold. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, I put the photo on my website. I was just amazed.
I saw that as well. Your backyard. You mentioned him, and he leaves so off the trees very quickly.
Well, not all the trees, but certain trees like ginkgo. For some reason, ginkgo is obviously very susceptible to this and very sensitive. And, man, they just all dropped straight down. I noticed it in my own backyard because I have a ginkgo. We saw it there first. And Kathleen said, look at the tree lost all of its leaves. And then they all fell straight down.
I think if you look back at what has happened around here the last 7 days, almost each day was its own little science project to some extent. And now we have this going on. But let's not lose sight of the fact that we had, some fairly good rain that happened early in the week. We got good rain yesterday. We'll get good rain again today. And this is great news for this time of the year. This is when you want the rain. You want it now when the ground is soft so it can really percolate. So I'm wondering if any of your listeners, Mike, who are maybe a little bit closer to some of those storms out in the northwestern sections of the listening area, if they want to chime in and say, hey, Rick, I see this. I'm all for anybody. They'll call in and say, I see something that I think other people should be aware of.
Well, they've got about 5 minutes if they want to do that while you're doing your report. But I think what can people expect to see over the next several hours? Let's go over that again.
Yeah. So what we have is this big area of low pressure, somewhat reminiscent of the big storm that went across the northern Great Lakes. That sunk the Edmund Fitzgerald back in 1975, November the 10th. This system is moving very quickly out of the desert southwest. Right now it's centered over western Missouri. Air temperatures currently in the mid-60s, dew points in the low 60s, winds out of the south at about 20 miles per hour. So from a wind standpoint, surface winds anywhere between 25 and 35 miles per hour now. Once the front goes through between about, say, noon and 1 o'clock, that's when the severe weather shift, or the severe weather threat, will generally shift off to the east. So with that severe weather threat, which is beginning now in the northwestern suburbs, very strong winds. You can maybe have 50, 60, 70 mile-per-hour wind gusts with some of these very, very fast-moving thunderstorms. Again, obviously, heavy rain is going to be probably the number one concern. But I really think isolated tornadoes is a definite possibility because the air is moving so fast. So bottom line, half hour to 45 minutes of brief heavy rain, possibility of isolated tornadoes. To me, if you hear a siren or it looks pretty dark, it's probably the best thing to do is to go into the safest room of your house, obviously a closet or a bathroom. I'm not blowing this out of proportion by any extent, but these are really slow-moving and very small tornadoes. It's not like what you get down in Oklahoma City. So western suburbs, the threat should be over with by about noon. here in the city probably about 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in northwestern sections of Indiana. Once that moves through, winds will shift out of the west. We may actually see gusts anywhere between 40 and 50 miles per hour. We're also under a high wind advisory. Let me check that. A high wind warning. That means it's going to happen up until about 10 o'clock tonight. So, again, all this happening within the next 12 hours, and obviously in the short term, the main concern is what's happening across McHenry County right now. Now, I'm just looking, Mike, at the new warning, and they just kind of updated it. It's now from extreme northwestern sections of McHenry County. And, again, tornado still not on the ground yet, but it's still radar indicated, which is a good thing. That means that they don't see it on the ground. But it is moving to the northeast at 55 miles per hour, and that warning is up for probably another, I'd say, 10 minutes. And then I think we're out of the danger zone at that point.
Okay, you know, it's kind of unusual for us, as you mentioned, this is not the time when people are listening for these kinds of things, and usually we don't have that kind of weather rolling through here on a Sunday morning.
No, not at all. And really, if I can get a minute of talking about the terrible typhoon that took place over the last week. I know we talked about it last weekend, but when you hear about the fact that the recovery effort, a response effort, was basically nil the first 3 or 4 days. I think people need to realize that the first responders in that area were wiped out. It's not like you live on a landmass where you could drive buses and trucks and cars and emergency vehicles down highways. These people live on islands with very narrow roads. And if those islands are basically landlocked at that point, or isolated, there's no way of explaining it, the ability to get recovery efforts there is really, really tough. So, as I mentioned to my students the other day, I go, how many people woke up and had a cup of coffee this morning? How many people took a shower? How many people had breakfast? How many people slept in a bed? Think about all those people in the Philippines that didn't have that today and probably didn't have it for the last 3 or 4 days. Mm-hmm. Probably won't have it for a week. So this is when people really need to dig into their pockets and go to their favorite charities, most likely their church or community organization nearby, and donate $10, $20, $30, $40, $50. That buys a lot of rice, and that goes a long way and helping these people recover. Because we've seen in past events, it's not so much what happens in the now, it's what happens in the past. And these areas, oftentimes you get a lot of waterborne diseases, typhoid, with the diarrhea and things like right. that. Oftentimes the recovery effort goes a lot longer than we think about what actually goes on here in that state.
I think that's a really good point.
Well, and it's a country that's been hit so hard so many times.
And this is going to go down as the worst natural disaster, Lisa, ever in the history of the Philippines. This doesn't normally happen to them. They're usually pretty good with recovering from catastrophic events, but this one was
all right. And that leaves you with about 20 seconds for a quick forecast for the week.
Yeah, obviously, Mike, the number one concern is the tornado watch in effect for all of northern Illinois up until about 2 or 3 o'clock this afternoon. And then much cooler tomorrow, dry conditions for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday with temperatures each day right around 40 degrees.
That's great. Rick, it's so good to have you on top of things, and I'm glad you're part of the show. And be safe at the ball game, okay?
It'll be interesting to watch punts go the other way, Mike.
Okay. We'll talk to you next week.
Take care.
Rick DeMaio, weather on the Mike Novak Show. Busy second hour coming up. And again, go to crh.noaa.gov/LOT and you can get more information.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees. And by Recycled Granite, featuring eco-friendly split stone veneers and handmade products by individuals with disabilities. Go to recycledgranite.com. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
We're getting everybody rolled into the studio here. Again, if you want more information on the storms that are headed our way, and I would ask you, Han Pham, what it's like out there right now.
It is quite windy out there. We had to just pull ourselves in. but we're glad to be here.
Well,
thanks, Mike.
I'm glad you are here. And she's with Anne. And pronounce that again for me.
Anne Camo.
Camo. All right. Let's make sure I've got that right. And Killian Walsh.
Good morning. Thank you for letting us come on.
Oh, thank you for being here. And they're all from the Edgewater Environmental Sustainability Project. We will. I wanted to let people know, though, that if you were listening at the end of the last hour, Rick DeMaio was saying that this is actually serious weather out there, and you need to pay attention. If you want more information, you can go to www.crh.noaa.gov/LOT. We also, Lisa, you put that link up on Facebook, right?
Indeed.
So it'd be easier for you if you're following us on Facebook to just go there and get the link, and you can see that right now. Let me see. I'll refresh this and see if anything's changed. Oh, I just saw a tornado warning pop up.
Well, and Peggy from Natural Awakenings just mentioned that she's got sirens going off in Pleasant Prairie.
Pleasant Prairie.
Keep your eyes open, folks.
Yeah, and I saw, and this is in just the north of the Wisconsin state line in the Kenosha area, just west of Kenosha. There's a box with a tornado warning in that area. So, folks, pay attention. As Rick DeMaio said, this is serious stuff. And Rick, if you're listening, I'll tell you what, Carol, why don't you get on the phone and contact Rick, and if he wants to do anything in the next hour to update us on this, I think that would be very, very helpful. And again, as Rick says, we're not trying to overblow this, but there is, you know, when you watch the tornado warning pop up on the map.
Well, and I, because of Rick's warning, I texted my brother who was headed to a 6-year-old football game in Kenosha, and they turned around and went home.
Wow. There you go.
So there you go. Thanks, Rick.
Yeah. Thank you, Rick. And so, well, if necessary, we'll get Rick DeMaio back in here and update things as we go along. As I mentioned before, I have a trio of folks in the studio, and that is Anne Camo, Han Pham, and Killian Walsh. And Han, you and I have met. You can just pull that mic over to yourself there because of your work with Loyola. Are you... you do work at Loyola University, right?
In Chicago. I do.
And your title there is?
Compost coordinator.
How many people get that kind of a title? A compost coordinator.
I like that. Not many.
I think that's a good thing. And I'm glad you're doing it because you made a presentation to the Chicago Recycling Coalition a few weeks back and telling us an initiative that you're working on. Why don't you explain what that is and how it works there?
Sure. We are working on the Compost Collection Network, and the goal is to catalyze businesses to start composting. There's so much food waste in Chicago. About a third of what's thrown away in Chicago is organics, is food waste. So Chicago at Loyola, we want to reach beyond our classroom walls into the community, and what we're learning in the campus in terms of what we're doing with compost, we wanted to expand that. So we're reaching out to businesses, helping them start their own commercial compost programs.
And what kind of businesses are you hoping to get involved?
So far we have 4 businesses, and we have...
It's about a start.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the Field Museum, True Nature Grocery Store, Heartland Cafe, and Uncommon Ground, which is one of the most, you know, greenest restaurants.
I'm not surprised at Heartland or Uncommon Ground.
Nope, not surprised at all.
Or the Field Museum, for that matter. You know, I know Carter O'Brien there, and he's doing great stuff in their sustainability efforts at the Field Museum. Why is it difficult to get more people on board with this, do you think?
I think there are a number of factors. One of those is just something new. I think people are afraid of change, and I think their back of the house, their kitchen staff, is used to dealing with food scraps a certain way, and to retrain is a hurdle. There's also the ick factor. I don't want to just keep my food scraps in the alley. When are they going to come and pick it up? There's that factor, as well as just there's a cost associated with it. Right now, the people who are doing it are the leaders, the innovators in the market, and they're paying a bit of a premium to do it at the time. But we're, because of the network, we're hoping to increase that and to make the price better.
Well, I think we should bring in one other person who knows something about composting, and she's on the phone right now, and that is Senator Heather Staines. Senator, good morning.
Good morning.
It's wonderful to have you on the program.
Glad to be here. Thanks.
You, as I mentioned, know something about composting because you were instrumental in passing SB 99 in Illinois back in 2009. And it, as I wrote on my website, brought some badly needed common sense to composting laws in Illinois. Can you briefly explain what that bill did and how it's played out in the last several years?
Yes. So the bill made composting of commercial food scraps legal in Illinois. It was really challenging before to ever do siting or really get composting, food scrap composting up and running. So it was taking away a lot of the barriers for that. And in fact, we are now seeing a real growth in food composting. You know, I went and toured in October. A large facility that Waste Management is managing, it's down in the Joliet area. And there's clearly a growing demand for this, which is exciting to see.
Well, that was obviously one of the things you had in mind. And we really, for folks to understand this, we need to go back to those pre-SB 99 days when food scrap was basically considered toxic. It was treated, you know, like industrial waste or something, and that was just absurd, wasn't it?
Right, exactly. So it really does. It sort of has required trying to sort of shift the way people think about this.
Yeah.
And you really need it now. There's sort of science around what makes a good composting site sort of work well, but food scrap mixed in with leaves and all sorts of things or other organic products really turns into fabulous composting product that there's also, I believe, a growing demand for. So you can really turn this, what used to just go into filling our landfills, into something that's a valuable and useful product. So it just takes time to sort of make that mindset shift and get and put in place the structures that make this all work.
Well, Senator Staines, part of the problem was, though, that other states were already doing this and we were getting left behind, weren't we?
That is true, yes. So, yeah, happy we've caught, we're catching up, you know, and I think we do have a very, and we really, I think one of the concerns people had is sort of odor issues that you can come with composting, and there have been not many problems in actually implementation of this. We haven't had any outcrying of concerns or any desires to try to go back on this at all. In fact, it's been going the other way to try to make it easier for other kinds of localities to do it. This year, we sort of did a follow-up to make it easier for urban farmers and gardeners to try to expand their own composting options in their urban settings as mm-hmm. well. So I think we're going to keep making progress on how we're doing this as I think the public comes to understand that this really is a good thing and has a really positive outcome.
Yeah, I've been involved in some of those meetings to get the composting in the city up to speed. Jennifer Walling, is who is now the executive director of the Illinois Environmental Council, was your staffer back in 2009, and I understand she played a pretty significant role in getting SB 99 passed.
She sure did. She was instrumental in helping to bring the parties together to negotiate it, and she's now running the Illinois Environmental Council, and from that vantage point has been able to really keep her finger on this and help keep advancing it to make sure it's working well.
You mentioned the odor. I was involved. I went to a food scrap seminar in the late winter in February, and one of the people who operates that one of those facilities says, the minute you move that into an area, if folks find out, they will issue complaints, even if they don't smell anything. It's just the idea. Their fear is greater than any reality, and they fear that there's going to be this awful odor. And I guess part of the other fear is of some sort of pathogens getting out into the public. That and anybody here in the room is welcome to speak to that as well. I have with me in the studio Ann Kamo, Killian Walsh, and Han Pham, and on the phone, Senator Heather Staines from the 7th District of Illinois. We have to overcome that fear somehow, don't we? And how are we doing that?
Well, a good example is the way Waste Management has been managing their facility in Joliet. It's a large one, and they had gotten concerns once they started taking in food scraps, calls about odor. And what they have found is it's not food scraps, it's yard waste, that if you have any aroma issue, it's generally yard waste that's the culprit. Hmm. And once people come in and actually understand it, that the concern about it goes away because people don't have that same sort of emotional concern around, you know, lawn scrapings as they do about food scraps. So there really is, I think, sort of a psychological and educational component around this. And they have found that once they've been bringing local groups in and touring it and understanding it, that those complaints have really dissipated because people understand actually how it's working. So I do think there's just, as more people start composting and understanding it, those things start going down. But it takes a while. I mean, it really is an education, sort of public awareness issue.
That's a really good point, that nothing in this area gets done without education. And the same thing with simple recycling. You really, if you don't explain to people what they need to put in the recycling bins, they won't do it, or they won't do it right. And but getting back to composting, let's move that to the Edgewater Environmental Sustainability Project and Andersonville, where you've got a new food waste composting program. Who'd like to tell me a little bit about that and how that got started? Han?
Before Han speaks up, I'd like to say what you're doing right now is the education and public awareness part for composting. So what we're starting here is the way to educate people that composting food waste is not a bad thing, it's not a smelly thing, and thank you, Heather, for your participation, and also Helen Cameron of Uncommon Ground, who is one of the leaders, as well as Jen. So, Han, go ahead.
Sure. In terms of the Andersonville composting, it's a residential program as well as commercial program. I know currently Hamburger Mary's is on board and started composting, and there's a number of residents, I believe almost 100 residents, that started composting through a bucket program. So it just launched within a couple of months or so, and it's going well. So it's a pilot program in Andersonville, so folks are interested, they can definitely go on the Andersonville website and check
so
it out.
So what are the what's the territory for
the boundaries of
the boundaries. Thank you.
for the businesses, it's along Clark, from Foster to north of Bryn Mawr, I believe. And then the boundaries for the residents, I actually don't have that off the top of my head, but yeah, it's definitely on their website.
I would expect probably because Andersonville is in Edgewater, probably is all of Edgewater. They can do the pickup of the buckets, and I would encourage people to call and to participate, because the more participation we have and the more composting we have, the better off we all will be in this recycling.
Well, as you pointed out, fully a third of our waste stream is organics, and we need to address that. It's an easy thing to do, and as Senator Staines pointed out, it becomes a valuable product. When you turn it into soil, this is the gardener's dream, you
exactly
know, to have this
exactly
stuff. Give me that. Why don't you give me that phone number? You said people, do you have the phone number?
I actually don't have it off the top of my head. I'm sorry.
All right.
Which phone number?
The Andersonville.
So we can track
composting
down.
Composting pilot program.
Yeah. Is that on your
it would
site?
Be on the Andersonville site.
Okay, yeah, development core. We can find.
We have the technology
to track that down here.
They can also reach us through Facebook at Edgewater Environmental Sustainability Project. They can message us, and then we will send the information on. We'll connect them.
Okay, cool.
Can I?
Yeah, go ahead.
Make a little suggestion or a comment.
Sure.
I recently visited a compost site, Midwest Organics in McHenry, and I found it really interesting to see how their composting works, because he makes such a high grade of compost that it goes to the botanic gardens, it goes to the nurseries around the area, and it also gets a piece of it gets bagged and sold at retail markets such as Whole Foods. And he says when he plants, his tomato plants, in the compost that he creates. It's amazing. The taste of the tomato doesn't taste like what you get at a grocery store. And it's the temperature of the windrow gets up to 140, 160 degrees. So pathogens, things like that, they die off. So if there's any issue about rodents or smell and such, it gets mixed with landscape waste and the food. And so immediately when a bunch of food scraps gets put in that site, then it gets mixed in. And then that odor issue is gone once they go into a windrow.
And it's not really that complicated. It is the process of nature and breaking down stuff. And a lot of people do this in their backyards. I have a compost pile and a city issued, I call my Darth Vader helmet. Senator, they look like that, don't they?
They do.
And, I throw my stuff in there and, it melts down. It's just amazing because I turn it occasionally, but there's a thing you can do called cold composting, which is basically you throw the stuff in the pile and then you walk away. But if you want to do it like they do at Midwest Organics, Kruger, what's his first name?
Ted.
There we go. Couldn't remember. Ted Kruger. And I know Ted, and I've met him, and he's a great guy, and he's got a great facility out there. But it is the kind of thing you can do on your own if you have the space. But now in Andersonville, how does that work? They buy a bucket?
They get a bucket. It's on loan. And they can put anything
like
that
a 5-gallon paint bucket.
Yeah, with the lid.
Yeah.
And they can put anything that was once alive into there, and it gets picked up once a week.
Well, you're not talking about animal organics.
It is, actually. Anything that was once alive. So meat, cheese, bones, anything that was once alive. So that's the difference between a backyard composting operation and something that's commercial. So commercial can break down the animal-related material,
I think helps backyard. Make it easier because I think a lot of times where people feel like, oh, it's too hard because they don't want to split, the scraps on their kids' plate to separate between meat products and veggies because it's usually all mixed up, especially if it's, let's say a casserole or something where it's all in one dish. How do you make that separation so it all goes in the garbage? And by putting it through a commercial process, you can get rid of everything. And hello, that gets the stinky stuff out of your house. So you can maybe take the garbage out a little less, just do your composting more often.
What are the restrictions on what they can put in there? Anything?
Well, I think the utensils are a challenge. The compostable utensils are a big challenge in compost facilities right now.
Because they're not really.
They're not really. Even if they are BPI certified, they've found that once it's actually in a facility, it actually doesn't compost. So anything that goes to Midwest Organics is not a compostable utensil.
Well, I don't want to leave Senator Staines hanging on the phone here because I know you're a busy person. What do you see as the future of this in Illinois?
Well, the City of Oak Park now has a residential curbside pickup program for organic materials. I think just as recycling now become part of our overall efforts on waste management, I think composting is going to be the future direction of this. And hopefully we're going to keep making it easier for, average folks to actually do this, like what Andersonville's testing. Hopefully we can sort of broaden those kind of programs and make it easy for people to do that and keep these products out of our landfill and turn them back into useful products. So, I think there's lots of real room for growth in the way we're doing this. Well, and I think Oak Park, it'll be fun to see how that works.
Yeah, because, I'm president of the Chicago Recycling Coalition, and we have a hard enough time recycling plastic bottles. And I always look to the future and say we've got to figure out a way to get this organic material collected. But when people are living in 80-story buildings and don't have yards and that sort of thing, it becomes difficult. But I think it can be done, and we have to start doing that now. You mentioned some of what's going on in Illinois in terms of the professional composting. Are you finding that the contracts are being issued and facilities are coming together?
Yes. No, I think the facilities have been coming more on board. I mean, one of the issues we had when we passed the bill originally to do commercial composting was some of the big organizations that manage landfills
were concerned about that taking away from what's going into the landfill. But now they're seeing new business opportunities and really turning that mindset around. And I think that kind of shift in thinking and the way people are viewing it is going to continue to expand and grow and create more opportunities. And it gets more people on board trying to figure out how do we make composting work and broaden it, as opposed to trying to regulate it and keep it back. It's a real shift in attitudes that are coming that I think bring a lot more creativity and great thought to us as policymakers on how do we make this work well.
Yeah, and well, and the other thing, of course, is you have to make it lucrative. You have to find a way for how do people make money at it? And this has always been the difficulty of something like this. It's not something that in the past has been financially viable. So we have to move towards that by making it necessary for everybody
to do. And I would say it's a great product, but I think there needs to be an increased focus, too, on really creating the demand for that composting product as well, because that will help with that aspect to it. And compost really is great. I'm not sure it's as widely used now as it can or should be, so mm-hmm. I think there's more opportunities in that regard as well.
Well, again, we talk about the educational component. I sit here and I talk about compost, and I'm sure that there's, a good percentage of my audience has no idea really what compost is. They'll say, well, is that dirt or is that the same as mulch? And you say, well, sometimes, but not really. And, it's organic matter that breaks down. It decomposes and it becomes like soil. And in this soil, you have a biology, an incredible variety of micro and macro organisms that are doing their jobs. And when you put them in their yard, they do wonderful things because, as we've said on the program over and over again, it's the biology, stupid.
Sure. and we had Kelsey Shaw from Possibility Place. On a few weeks ago, who talked about how, by using compost into your soil composition, your plants and vegetables grow exponentially faster and you get a healthier product as a result. So, so it's a full cycle thing, which is encouraging. It's real circle of life kind of thing where you're consuming food and this is adding to the climate issue, but through consciously recycling, we're contributing back to the earth. So I speak in public so often on climate issues, and I think people feel impotent about what can I do? Well, here's a really simple thing you can do in your family, and then by expanding it to municipalities, you can do it in your community. So you want to make a difference? Here's a simple way to do that.
Yeah. Well, Senator Staines, I appreciate you being on the program. We're going to carry on without you for a few more minutes. And congratulations on this law. And we need to continue to work and educate people.
Well, and thank you for your efforts on that. You've been a fabulous advocate for it. So really appreciate it.
I finally got you on the show after all these years. And we'll do it
anytime.
Okay. I will do that. I'm going to hold you to that. All right. Well, I'll talk to you later.
Great. Bye.
Bye.
While we're saying goodbye, I just want to say she has an incredible environmental report card when it comes to Illinois policy and legislature. So thank you, Senator Staines, for all of your hard work on so many important topics.
And this one in particular. So what I would tell people, well, if you're in Oak Park, obviously, that's great. Start participate in that program. If you're in Andersonville, participate in that program. Track down a phone number yet for them?
Sorry, I was looking up the phone number, but I did get, so it's Peterson Avenue on the north, okay. Lawrence Avenue on the south, Ravenswood on the west, and Ridge and Broadway on the east.
Okay.
So when you think of Anderson, those are pretty much the normal streets I think about, right? So it's Peterson, Lawrence, Ravenswood, and Broadway.
The website that that they want to go to, would it be the Andersonville Development Corp, which is Andersonville, DEVCORP.org. And you can go there and sign up. And if you do live in Andersonville, I would encourage you to be part of this.
And it looks like it's incredibly flexible. Businesses can pick a different size totes that will come through, 32, 65, or 95 gallons. And very reasonable. If you have, a small 5-gallon bin in your own home, it's $3 a pickup. So this is really affordable you know.
Where, now, what side are you on finding all this stuff?
I'm on this weekend, Mike Novak, you posted.
It's something I posted. Yeah, it's like.
So it's the DNA Info Chicago website, which is chock full of great information.
Okay. What? Okay.
DNAinfo.com.
Okay. Good. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. In the studio, Ann Camo, Han Pham, Killian Walsh, and we're talking about the Edgewater Environmental Sustainability Project. So what else is going on? Obviously, you've started composting or trying to collect food waste, but you guys are doing a lot of other different things. Anybody, just start.
Yes, we are, and it's kind of exciting because we're also working with CNT Energy, which is a nonprofit here in Illinois and very well known. They are doing energy efficiency upgrades. They're working with people to look at their homes to do energy efficiency assessments. And then they're helping homeowners, single family homeowners and larger homeowners, as well as larger building owners to make differences and upgrade their energy efficiency. That is, they will help them with loans. They'll help them with rebates. And we are going out into the community and trying to get more people signed up to this project.
Well, if you talk to Lisa, she knows that the key to energy efficiency is it is that's where you want to start with stuff, you know, before you go.
Absolutely, the dollar saved is compounded interest in terms of money in your pocket and the impact on the environment.
Yeah, we talked about that last week with the ComEd people and the different things you can do to your home.
And ComEd is one of the supporters of this particular project. But the exciting thing about this is that CNT Energy takes the information that people have on their bills before they have their energy upgrades, and then they follow the percentages of savings that people get afterwards. So this is not just for the individuals to follow. Mm-hmm. It's a major uptaking with respect to the community of Chicago and Edgewater, so we know exactly what the savings are in terms of energy efficiency, the amount of greenhouse gases that are no longer emitted, my interest, as well as the amount of savings that each person can get from making a change, whether they insulate their roof, whether they do caulking on their windows, whether they do all the other things that are suggested by these various entities.
Now, how do they quantify this?
They look at the bills. Number one is they look at the original bills from People's Energy, People's Gas, as well as ComEd, and they check how much energy is being used. Then they take the sequence of months every year and throughout the years to follow the amount of energy that is no longer being pulled by the home or the building.
And how successful have you been in both residences and businesses in Andersonville and Edgewater?
In Edgewater, they made presentations. They began last year, and we're just starting to spread the word. You know how it is when you start to discuss things, you begin, the pebble goes into the water, and all of a sudden it spreads out. Well, we have 56 homes that have signed up, and my own condo got involved with the assessment, and we're going to make changes. It takes time to do it. It takes money.
Really?
You know.
Does it?
It does.
That's why I haven't had my insulation done.
I want to encourage you to do that. You'll feel better afterwards.
Oh, I know. We've talked about it on the show. I've got these balloon walls, and I have to fill them. You know, I'm
just full of air. I know. So anyway, yes, so they're trying to quantify it in that way, and they're looking at the amount of carbon is saved, that kind of quantification.
Yeah. All right. Hey, listen, I need to take a short break here, but we will return to our conversation with Ann Camo, Han Pham, and Killian Walsh from the Edgewater Environmental Sustainability Project. Now, we had a little taste of snow this week, at least in certain parts of the Chicago region. And where there's snow, there's often salt, which can be very hard on your plants. Well, just in time, the November-December issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine takes a look at plants that deal with the assault of salt. A little turn of phrase. Here are some examples from several categories. Perennials, well, these plants can withstand a little bit of salt. Sea thrift, feather reed grass, sea lavender, several types of artemisia, Stella d'Oro daylily. I'm not a huge fan of daylilies, but that's one of the reasons people grow them is because they're tough. Pallas purple coral bells. and hostas, even hostas, go figure. In evergreens, Mugo pine and most varieties of juniper can handle some salt. Deciduous trees include serviceberry, honey locust, sweet gum, and white oak. Shrubs, cotoneaster, forsythia, and rosa rugosa. So that's why people grow the rugosa roses, because, again, they're tough. Now, something else that the story addresses is the different kinds of salt exposure. There's airborne salt spray and the salt that percolates into your soil. The article goes on to explain how to mitigate the damage from each. And then you might want to check out my column on the inside back page. It's a little salty, but not fatal. Get a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. Call 888-265-3600, 888-265-3600, or go to chicagolandgardening.com.
Hi, this is Ron Calvio from Mighty House. Are you looking for a new ride? Looking for a cool ride? Looking for a ride that you can plug in so you can flip off the guy at the gas station? Well, here's your chance to get one for as little as $40. The Illinois Solar Energy Association is raffling off a 2014 Chevy Volt, and only 3,000 tickets will be sold. So how do you win? Go to illinoisolar.org and click on the link to the Chevy Volt raffle. You can buy one ticket for $40, two tickets for $60, or four tickets for $100. All raffle proceeds will fully benefit the Illinois Solar Energy Association, a nonprofit working to advance solar energy development throughout the state of Illinois. The winner will be drawn at the ISEA member meeting on December 7th, 2013. Again, that's illinoisolar.org to buy your tickets and to get all the small print details.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I don't want you to be left out. Here's what I'm talking about. Each month, more people turn to Natural Awakening Chicago to improve their lives than any other health or wellness magazine. If you're a green, natural health, or wellness business, you should be part of the leading sustainability resource in the country. Natural Awakenings is packed with information that our readers use to find the products and services they need to live happier, healthier lives. Natural Awakenings is available for free each month throughout the city and north and northwest suburbs. We're placed in more than 1,100 area locations, ensuring the right eyes read about your products and services. We're also online at nachicagonorth.com. We're local, we're independent, and our readers will help you grow your business. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. I just went to the NOAA site again and clicked, refreshed it, and that tornado warning is now extending into Illinois near Rockford. So again, as we mentioned during the Rick DeMaio segment earlier today, there's some weather out there. Be alert. Pay attention, okay? If you want to go to this site and get more information, you can go to www.crh.noaa.gov/LOT, and that will give you a map of the area and the various watches, warnings, and advisories that are on there. crh.noaa.gov/LOT. We are talking to folks from the Edgewater Environmental Sustainability Project, and a good question is, how did this happen? How is it that you banded together to pursue environmental issues?
Our
group started through Edgewater Community Council. It was Edgewater Beautiful, and as the Climate Act came through with Ann and
the Climate Action Plan, as you know, was released in 2008. And we were sort of a little beautification committee doing parkways and things like that and decided, gee, this is really worrisome. Let's forget about parkways and think about the health and safety of our community and the health and safety of the world, which we can't save the world, so let's do a little bit in the grassroots area.
Yeah.
And we began by saying, let's make a plan. Let's start a project. And as we began all this, we realized we were chewing off a little bit more than we could swallow, but we did it anyway.
Why do you say that? What makes you say that?
Well, we had ambition. We wanted to be a model green community.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're a model green community, suddenly you begin looking at things not just beautification, not just cleaning, not just composting. You have to look at the parkways. You have to look at the urban tree canopy. You have to look at energy efficiency. You have to see how many people are doing renewable energy.
It's a slippery slope,
isn't
it? It's
a slippery slope.
I mean,
what are your goals?
It happens in households as well. I mean, the minute you start paying attention to those things, you're paying attention to all of them all the time.
Exactly. And as you begin to pay attention to all of them all the time, you realize you have to get more people involved in this, that it's not just your project. It belongs to faith groups. It belongs to public officials like Senator Staines, who is a big supporter. Her chief of staff is on our Green Schools Committee, and they help us so much in making changes with the schools so that they can participate in recycling and all those other things. So we began in that way. We began as a project.
And from that, we developed a plan. We're the first neighborhood with a plan. We have a 34-page plan covering 10 areas of concerns from planning development, green schools, reduce, recycle, parks, water and air, renewable energy, public education, and neighborhood beautification cleaning. One thing that's nice about Edgewater, all our legislation is in one building. We have our state rep, our state senator, our alderman, Harry Osterman, and we can do legislation. So we brought together Helen Cameron from Uncommon Ground, Susan Malik with the city. It's 100% volunteer. It's the first group that could build a community through sustainability actions.
And how have you found, what's reaction been in Edgewater?
This is, it's very interesting. At first, you know, it takes a little while for people to get revved up about things, but they like to do little things. If you make things easy, for example, as Han could tell you, if you begin to interest people in composting, they'll compost when they find out it's a positive. If you interest people in recycling, more people will sign up because they see their friends recycling. It becomes important.
Mm-hmm.
If you talk about energy efficiency long enough, and you realize the city has made some changes in regulations where you have to insulate your ceiling, for your roof, for example, then you make those changes and say, boy, am I doing good. Now, if someone tells you as a tip, when you're brushing your teeth, please turn off the water and you'll save quite a bit of water in the year, you'll start doing it. These small things that we all do.
Well, we found that number if people want to call and participate in the Andersonville food scrap composting effort, and it's 773-728-7552. 773-728-7552. And I hope that folks who are living there, listening to the show today, will flood the phone lines.
We want the compost project to be very successful.
Operators are standing by to take your compost. Well, listen, thank you all for coming by. Han Pham, Ann Camo, Killian Walsh. I want to thank Senator Heather Staines as well for being part of this. And congratulations on getting this up and running. As you said, it once you open the floodgates, now you got to work everything. But I think, go ahead, Killian.
Well, and also we're part of Accelerate 77 and the Transportation Task Force. So we have meetings once a month where people can come in that want to network with us. We're one of the first community groups to really bring green as a networking and building and public safety. And it's an amazing organization. Please find us on Facebook at Edgewater Environmental Sustainability Project.
There you go. Edgewater Environmental Sustainability Project. Yes,
Holly. And if you're a business who's interested in composting, then check out luc.edu/composting and check out the Compost Collection Network, because we would love to have more than four business partners involved.
Give folks that information again.
luc.edu/composting. And then just scroll down to the Compost Collection Network, and we would love to hear more from you if you're interested in composting as a business.
And I will also have my final say. This is Ann. Do check us out on the wiki, www.edgewater2020.org. And this shows it's a living document. All the chairs that work on this make changes, and every chair on our group is involved in working out this document.
Well,
thank you.
All right. You're welcome, and congratulations, and I'm sure we'll be talking more in the future.
Thanks so much, Mike.
Thank you.
ComEd Smart Ideas presents The Power of Small Changes.
Help! I'm a light bulb left on in an empty room. My energy is being wasted.
Fear not. I can help. There you go.
I'm saved.
Be a hero.
Hooray!
Save energy. Visit ComEd.com/home savings to find discounts and money-saving tips, like switching to compact fluorescents.
Visit ComEd.com/home savings.
ComEd, powering lives. This program is funded by ComEd customers in compliance with Illinois law.
The Mike Novak Show is sponsored in part by ComEd Smart Ideas. Discover instant discounts and money-saving tips at ComEd.com/home savings.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687, for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Text CONTR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. With money tight, you're going to hear landscapers say, "Don't worry, I do tree care." When they say that, here's what you ask them. Are you a trained, educated, and certified tree professional? Because that's what you'll get with the Care of Trees. They are trained in up-to-date technologies and techniques and use safe work practices. They follow the most progressive standards and guidelines for tree care work. They are also bonded and insured to protect you and their workers. Can you say that about Joe the landscaper? With 9 locations, the Care of Trees has been serving Chicagoland for 60 years. Make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Talk to a certified arborist at the Care of Trees. Call 800-508-9466. 800-508-9466. Write it down and call that number for a free consultation. They'll come out and talk to you for free. If you call today on a Sunday, leave a message and your call will be returned tomorrow. Or you can go to the website, thecareoftrees.com. The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM, and we roll along with yet another really, really busy program today, and I'm happy to have in the studio with me Jody Osman, who's with Cedar Valley Sustainable Farm. Jody, it's good to see you.
Good morning.
You are making your first appearance on the show.
That's correct. My wife Beth has been on a couple of times.
Yeah, yeah. Although I looked it up and it's been a while. It's been like a couple of years since you guys were here. Tell me about your operation again. Remind people where you are and what you do.
Well, Cedar Valley Sustainable Farm is located in Ottawa, Illinois, which is about an hour and a half southwest of the city of Chicago. And we operate a community-supported agriculture program dealing in meat and eggs. We do a monthly delivery of beef, chicken, pork, and eggs to about 200 families each month.
Oh, you and I ran into each other at the Logan Square Farmers Market several weeks ago where, you know, Jody said, we got to do something on the show. And that's great. How many farmers markets are you involved in?
Well, the Logan Square is our primary farmers market. We did one in Joliet over the summer for several weeks. But we've been doing the Logan Square Farmers Market for 9 years now. We were one of the inaugural vendors there.
So you must be satisfied with the results, too. And the market itself seems it just gets bigger and bigger, doesn't it?
It has. A few years ago, they really expanded the number of vendors. And for a little while, a season or two, there was a bit of market dilution. But the crowds just keep coming and coming. And it's that kind of push and pull of the way a market will grow.
Yeah.
If you'll use the term organically, it's one of the things that we've really enjoyed about the Logan Square Market is watching that growth and the evolution of a market going from less than half a block with half a dozen vendors, but the community really building in support and some really grassroots promotion of that.
Mm-hmm.
There was a community organizer who said, Logan Square needs a farmers market, and she contacted the alderman and got it off the ground, and she had volunteers passing out flyers as churches came out on Sunday mornings. Hey, come and see the market. There's something new in the neighborhood. And it's really, really grown since then, and the community really has supported it for a long time. And it's a no wonder it is such a great market. And the other thing that makes it really great is all of the vendors there are very collegial and friendly, and we help each other out, and the customers really see that, and I think appreciate the friendliness of the market.
I also like the fact that you drive by and it's right out there on the boulevard. You know, I think that makes it it's good advertising for you guys.
I agree. It's not tucked away out of sight. It's a part of the neighborhood.
You mean the farmer's market?
Yeah, the farmer's market. Yeah. Yeah, because it's right there in the square and along the boulevard. And if you drive that area or cycle it or walk it, it's, you know, you turn the corner and bam, there's a farmer's market. Yeah, it's done for the season, the outdoor, but there's an indoor farmer's market. Do you have the information on that?
It goes the same time, I believe, 10 to 3. I don't have the address. We only participate in the outdoor market, so I don't have all the details on the indoor market.
Lisa will track that down for us.
But it is going on as we speak.
Yeah. All right. Let's also bring in Wes King, who's the executive director of Illinois Stewardship Alliance. Thank you. I just had a brain spasm there. The Illinois Stewardship Alliance. How you doing, Wes?
Pretty good. Morning. How are both of you?
Okay. Now that I'm, I think I need more coffee. And the two of you have been involved in something that's kind of cool, and that's why you're here today, is CSAs, Community Supported Agriculture, and reaching out and getting more people to know about CSAs. And you guys put something, where I don't know, Jody, if it's you or Wes, but who put together a Band of Farmers?
That's an effort of some farmers. I need to really talk about Julia McDonald, a Peasant's Plot Farm. She's one of the other farmers that I've been working with in organizing kind of a farmer-led marketing coalition. And we've also had a conference call with a number of other CSA farmers, including the folks at Angelic Organics up in Rockton, mm-hmm. and a number of other farms. But Band of Farmers began almost a year ago with a CSA farmer talent show that happened last March at the Hideout in the city.
And we're going to do it again March 15th, which will be a Saturday evening. We've done it in the
afternoon. Let me know when it's coming up.
It's March 15th. Mark your calendars. It'll be, I'm not sure the start time, but it'll go through the evening. We'll probably have a dozen or more farmer acts there. And we're working on a collaboration with the Good Food Festival to offer their Localicious attendees free admittance with their ticket and some sort of consideration with the general admission attendees from the Good Food Festival. Good Food Festival hasn't had anything going on Saturday night. Mm-hmm. So
we hope that
we can help extend that good feeling around good food that evening.
So you got this farmer talent show, and it's a band of farmers, but also somehow this ties into the 2013 Federal Employees Health and Benefits Fair, which is coming up on the 21st. Wes, maybe you can tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure. So I think maybe backing up and telling a little bit of the story, the origin behind working on trying to get CSAs as a part of this Federal Benefits Fair, really, it'll help paint the picture. And that is, so in Wisconsin, they have the Fair Share Coalition. It's a CSA marketing coalition. And one of the really innovative things they did a number of years ago is they made relationships with large employers and health insurance companies. So now in Wisconsin, you can get a rebate on your health insurance just for signing up for a CSA through the Fair Share Coalition. So this is something that, you know, people have talked about here in Illinois for a number of years, but I started thinking, okay, how are we going to make this a reality? And that's kind of where this, both the Band of Farmers CSA Marketing Coalition and this fair, the Federal Benefits Fair, dovetail. This is one of these opportunities to start building the CSA coalition, but also building relationships with large employers and people within the public health industry to try to hopefully, I want to see 2 or 3 years down the road, some health insurance companies offering rebates for Band of Farmer CSA shares. And that's really where it comes together. But the Federal Benefits Fair is it's a health and wellness fair for federal employees downtown Chicago. Mm-hmm. Every year around this time of the year, and it's just a place where they can come and learn about wellness programs and health benefits. And so for the first time ever, we're going to have a CSA fair there. So federal employees can learn about CSAs as a way of getting fresh, healthy, nutritious food to their families and on their plates.
Okay. Briefly, again, explain how do you think this rebate program would work? What would the rebate be on, and how would people qualify?
Well, you know, a lot of that's all, you know, those are details that are far down the road. But, you know, my vision is that if you, it would be a rebate offered to individual health insurance policy holders for signing up for a CSA through the Band of Farmers.
I see. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
It sounds like a great idea. And I like the idea that you guys are, expanding getting the word out to the federal employees, let them know what CSAs are and the benefits of purchasing fresh food. And I what a great audience for you to approach.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is the 21st. Now, obviously, you have to be a federal employee to be part of this, correct?
Yes, that's true. But I'm hoping, and I'm actually really hopeful, that this is going to be the first of many. It's, you know, this is going to be the first of many federal health benefit CSA components, but it's also going to be the first of other CSA fairs to introduce CSAs to other large employers in the city of Chicago.
Well, there's more information on my website, MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show, and you can check that out. I'm going to keep track of Band of Farmers for next year, Jody, so we make sure that we can let people know. We got a couple of minutes left here. I don't have a lot of time, but can you give me like the short version of what's going on with the farm bill, Wes?
Yeah, sure. Not much is going on with it.
Okay, well then we got to go. Thanks.
yeah. Well, you know, so the House Senate Conference Committee has met once officially all the members, both House and Senate, Republican and Democrats, have met together once. They've only met once, but since then, there's been a lot of work between staff of those members, trying to hammer out deals, figure out where they can. There's agreement already between the two bills. It's been pretty slow. As when I've been on the show before and we've talked about it, the big issue is still going to be what do they do with food stamps or the SNAP program.
Yeah.
The Senate and the House are so far apart on this that they haven't come to any conclusions at this point. The only, the one thing that I've heard is that on the commodity program, there's been some agreement around the larger structure of it, but that's it. So there's not a lot to report.
All right. And then they got to get it done. They have to get it done by the beginning of the year, or we're going to revert to 1948 or something like that.
We're actually already in the we're already technically supposed to have reverted back to the emergency farm bills of the late 1940s.
Yikes.
But they don't go into effect really until January 1, which is when the old milk program kicks in. And people have in the past called it the dairy cliff.
Okay.
Yeah, we'd be paying a lot more for dairy products come January 1st.
Oh, that'll be wonderful. Okay, now, before you got a minute left, and Jody, I want you to plug your own business. Tell people why they should go to Cedar Valley Sustainable Farm and get some meats.
Well, we're on the web at cedarvalleysustainable.com, and we provide, like I said, drug and hormone-free beef, chicken, pork, and eggs. We select genetics that's of the highest quality as far as eating quality. We have Black Angus cattle, Duroc and Hampshire hogs, and they're raised in manners that respect the nature of the animals. People can feel good about it, and well cared for animals are very tasty animals. And one of the things we really enjoy is the relationship we have with our members. You generally see either myself or my wife at a delivery, and whenever people have a question, we're right there to answer it and tell them what's going on.
Well, I'm glad that you stopped by. And Wes, thank you so much. And good luck with the band of farmers and the health fair. And we're at the end of the line here.
How?
I just say it. We say go green or.